Welcome. You're tuned into Life is a Sacred Journey. Every week, we bring a new perspective to aging and caregiving. Here is your host, Michelle Pohl.
Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you are in the virtual neighborhood of Life is a Sacred Journey. My name is Michelle Pope, and I am your host. And if you are back here at Friday morning in California at 8 a.m., thank you. And if you're joining us from somewhere else, thank you. I want to, today, because we've been blasting it out all over our social media, I have the honor of joining, having Dr. Aaron Blight join me here at Life is a Sacred Journey, and I'm going to bring him on, and you will be able to kind of sneak in on our conversation, and I hope that you will hit that share button, record it, do all the stuff that you know I forget to tell you to do. Felicia always gets after me, but share it because it's, again, I always tell you, this is not about Michelle Pope. This is about sharing information, my life experience, working with caregivers and being a caregiver so that your journey is a lot easier and that you have in your goodie grab bag all the resources that are out there in the community because you couldn't get them all, right? I didn't get them all. I have books back here, but I still don't have them all. So we bring people to you that you might not ever see or meet so that you can engage in conversation. So put some questions in the Facebook Live chat, and I will ask them, or I will respond to them later. But I wanted to bring to you something that I thought about. So last night, and Aaron can probably relate to this as well, I was sitting here writing a grant that I found out was due today at 5 o'clock, even though I got a notice on October 2nd, but I didn't see the email. Okay, that's life. And I started on the grant, and I was like, okay, that's life. Let's just make lemonade, you know, that old saying. And I started writing it, and I was here late into the evening. And just when I noticed that it said that if after 4 hours, that if you didn't save the content, it was going to disappear, I went to hit the button to say save draft, and just at the same time, something weird started to happen on the screen, and I realized, oh my gosh, my 4 hours is up. And I was at the last question of the grant. I said, okay, don't freak out. Let's go back in. Let's see if the content is there. And no, it wasn't. By that time, it was already 8:45 p.m., and I made the decision. I said, okay, we're going to stay. We're going to get halfway through it. And I put YouTube on, and I listened to Aaron Blight while I was doing. So, Aaron, I made lemonade out of this experience. And I listened to him, and I left like 3 or 4 questions and then got up early this morning and came in and finished it. I say that all to say to you, there was a time in my life that I would have been in tears. There was a time in my life that I would have went stomping through this office using language that I'm glad that nobody else was in the building to hear. There would have been a time that I would have just said, forget about it. I missed it. It's over, it's done. But now, it's about having a positive mind. It's about saying, wait a minute, it's still not 5 o'clock on Friday. You still have time. And even though you may not remember exactly what you said to all of those questions, you now have an experience of answering those questions, so it's going to come back to you a little differently. And it might just be better. Positive mind, positive vibe, positive life. So my friends out there in Life is a Sacred Journey land, thank you so much for coming back and making sure that we have a village of people that we can experience life with. I really, truly believe that life is a sacred journey no matter what part of the journey that you're on. But you've got to control, we have to control our lives in a way that we don't allow our emotions to destroy the positive energy that we can get out of every single experience. And Aaron's going to talk a little bit about that because I learned about that in his kinetics work. I'm excited about this interview. So let me tell you, so take that to heart and know that I'm telling you that from life experience. I'm not picking on you. And that's not what this is about. I'm sharing with you that I realized last night how much I've grown. Isn't that cool? And I'll finish the grant, put the last touches on it after we're done this morning. So welcome to Life is a Sacred Journey. It's great to have you here. And again, hit that share button. So let me tell you a little bit about Dr. Aaron Blight. He is an incredible man, and I just told him the one thing about him that resonated with my heart. He has an incredible resume, CV, all of that. But the fact that he said, I just look at myself as an average guy, that was it. That's all I needed to know, that this is a gentleman who really cares about the work, who really cares about, he didn't just go into it to make money. You know, we all have to make money because we got bills to pay. But there are some people who have turned aging into a capitalistic business where there's no heart to it. Whereas I can see that Dr. Blight, Aaron, is really not that kind of person, and that he's really trying to say, no, this is a heart business. This is a business where we have to connect with one another. And let's take the word business out and say community, right? And so I'm going to read a little bit, so forgive me for pulling my head down from the screen. He was a leader at the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, and I want to thank him for his years of service there. ACEB would not exist without the hard work of individuals there. And as a sidebar, I'll have to find out if he worked with my Auntie Maud, because she worked there for many years as well. And then he was also a family caregiver, so you'll hear a little bit about that story. And that resonated with me, being also a cancer survivor and knowing how hard it was for my family to navigate cancer in our lives. A home health company, healthcare company owner, Home Instead, a partner of Alzheimer's Services of the East Bay. And again, as you all know, I began my career in home health with interim home health. So we have similar resume. He's a care researcher and a scholar. So Dr. Aaron Blight is an international speaker and consultant on caregiving, aging, and healthcare. He is the founder of Caregiving Kinetics and co-creator of the Caregiving Transformation Retreat, which I'm going to ask him about both of those things, so you'll hear a little bit more. Aaron's passion, and that is really it, he has a passion for supporting caregivers, is rooted in his prior work, as I just said, his study of the science of, and I love that because, you know, I've traveled the world and studied the science of aging and how in America we do it very differently, and I've told you that many, many times, and that we throw money at it, not saying that we don't need the money, but we don't think about this connection thing that people need as they age. And so Aaron knows a lot about that, and we'll ask him. He also, as I said earlier, has experience as a family caregiver along with his spouse, his wife, and he also has been recognized as a top 100 healthcare leader by the International Forum on Advancement in Healthcare. He serves as an adjunct professor at Shenandoah University and is a board member for a number of care-related organizations. It is my honor, privilege, and I am humbled to meet my new BFF, Dr. Aaron Blight. Welcome to Life is a Sacred Journey, Aaron.
Hi, Michelle. Thank you so much. I'm so delighted to be with you. Thank you for that introduction. You kind of blew me away with that.
Well, you deserve it. It is who you are. And I know I want to start, first of all, because I think your story is amazing and that brought you to the wonderful book Where Caregiving Calls, which is just recently released. So I went on Amazon this morning, my friends, and if you order it today, you will have it by Christmas. So let me give you a minute, write it down, When Caregiving Calls, And it is an incredible book by Dr. Aaron Blight. I've ordered my copy. Mine will be at my house tomorrow. But if you order yours today, you will have it by Christmas. They actually said you'll have it by next Tuesday. So after this interview and you get to know the author better, buy one for yourself and buy one for somebody who is out there who you know is a caregiver, because we're all going to be caregivers at one point. So, Aaron, tell our virtual family why you went from being a home care owner, health care owner, to really digging deep into this whole phenomenon of caregiving as a science, as a relational science, then how it brought you to becoming an author of the book When Caregiving Calls.
Well, Michelle, first, thanks for having me here. I'm so excited to be with you today, and I just love your energy and your passion and clearly your knowledge about caregiving and aging.
Thank you.
And your perspective. I'm really excited to be talking with you today. You know, I, as you said, I was at the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services.
Mm-hmm.
This seems like a long time ago now, and I was in the Disabled and Elderly Health Programs group of the federal Medicaid program.
Oh, okay.
And I was writing national healthcare policy for elderly and disabled people. But if I'm being honest with you, Michelle, at that time in my life, I didn't really know a lot about what it meant to be elderly or disabled. I was 29.
Okay.
We had a young family, three young children. Our oldest daughter was 6 at the time. And we lived near my mother-in-law, and we would see her regularly. And one Sunday, she told us that she was seeing flashing lights.
Oh.
She didn't know what was going on with that. She was 59 years old.
Okay.
And so she decided to go get that checked out. And they told her that she had a brain tumor and that she needed immediate brain surgery.
Oh my God.
That she had weeks to live. And if she survived the OR and if she survived the brain surgery, she might live 6 to 9 months.
Oh my gosh.
And we were just, you know, completely caught off guard.
Right.
We did not expect that. But caregiving entered our lives immediately with that diagnosis. And so she had the brain surgery at a world-renowned facility, Johns Hopkins University. It was very innovative, cutting-edge brain surgery.
Mm-hmm.
And she came home. And she looked like Frankenstein, Michelle. I mean, she had staples in her skull, going up and around, all the way up and around her skull.
Mm.
And she was going to live with us for a couple weeks to recover from brain surgery.
Okay.
She stayed with us for a couple of years.
Oh, wow.
She went through radiation, chemotherapy, a second brain surgery while she was in our home. But her brain was never the same after that brain surgery.
Yeah.
She was in a state of cognitive decline, and that continued for 5.5 years. She actually lived for 5.5 years after that original diagnosis, and we were her caregivers that entire time. It transformed our family's life,
mm-hmm.
and it also led me to eventually become, to you know, near the end of her life, the hospice agency referred us to a home care company,
okay.
a company like Holmstead and Intra.
Okay. Yeah.
And they were a godsend for us. They relieved us of so many of the physical tasks of caregiving that we had to focus on. And we could be more about the family relationships as my mother-in-law was dying. So a year after she passed away, that's when I made the change. I left the federal Medicaid program and became a Holmstead Senior Care franchise owner. And I my business grew, and I ended up with two different franchises, one in Virginia, one in West Virginia.
Okay.
And I got to help a lot of people, a lot of families that were in situations like mine. And I learned how caregiving is very immensely personal, but at the same time, it's universal.
Yes, yes.
And I decided to go back to school and get my doctoral degree. And for my dissertation, I studied caregiving as a phenomenon of social science. And I learned so much about caregiving. We'll talk about that here today,
yeah,
I'm sure.
Yeah,
And then, you know, I've had a chance to teach a little bit. And 3 years ago, I received an unexpected, unsolicited offer to sell my business. And I wasn't really planning to do that. I mean, I was working on plan A. My business was going great. And but I'm a person of faith, Michelle, as I know you are.
Yes.
this opportunity drove me to some prayer. And I asked God, you know, should I do this? Because I really wasn't planning on it.
Right. That's how it works, though, Aaron. I think God has one of the best sense of humors of all.
That's right.
Yes.
So God said, yes, you need to do this. You know, I'm basically opening the door for you.
Yes.
You don't know what's on the other side, but I do.
Mm-hmm.
So all you have to do is have the faith to step through that door. So I did. On August 1st, 2017, my life changed overnight. And then I asked myself and I asked God, well, what do you want me to do now? I mean, I can't do nothing, right?
Right.
And I realized that, you know, between my experience as a family caregiver, my experience in Medicaid, as a home care company owner, and then also as a scholar studying caregiving, that I couldn't just put all that on the shelf. I needed to do something with that and help people who are in caregiving roles across the world. So I created Caregiving Kinetics, and that led me to this book, When Caregiving Calls, Guidance as You Care for a Parent, Spouse, or Aging Relative, which just came out in October.
Right.
And I'm super excited to share it with you.
Oh, I'm excited because the thing that I wrote down, a couple of things that I, again, listening to you last night, you talked about the caregiving code. So share that with folks, the caregiving code. I was like scurrying to try to find out what that was to see if I knew the code. So what? Tell our audience.
You know, this idea, in my mind, it's evolved a little bit, Michelle.
Mm-hmm.
I don't use the word code so much anymore, but
mm-hmm.
I like the word framework. But if you think about it, a code, okay, a code is something that you may not fully understand, but it's there. You know,
mm-hmm.
you think about Morse code, for
mm-hmm.
example.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know Morse code.
Knowing me, nor
I. Yeah, but I can hear it. You know, I can see it. I can pull out that little telegraph thing, and
yeah.
I can do this.
Yeah.
You know, I can do dot, 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 dot,
dot. Yes, yes.
But it doesn't necessarily make any sense to me.
Uh-huh.
And when it comes to caregiving, a lot of caregivers are going through the motions of caregiving, the tasks of caregiving. There's so much urgency and necessity and so much focus on the tasks of caregiving that we often don't really reflect and think about the meaning of caregiving and what it's
right.
doing to us and our sense of who we are, our relationship with our loved one who we're caring for,
mm-hmm.
and in the social world, you know, how do we relate to one another after we've been in this caregiving role? And so the code of caregiving is a way for us to sort of frame the caregiving experience and think about it to gain insights that will allow us to understand the social dynamics of
yeah.
caregiving, the relational
yeah.
dynamics of caregiving, and confront some of the hard parts of caregiving, but also find some of the good parts of caregiving.
Mm-hmm.
When I talk about this, I'd like to use words that begin with the letter R.
Okay.
It's a little bit gimmicky.
Right, well, that's good.
It's a little bit gimmicky, but it's the
people
reason I
remember.
Do it this way, exactly, so that people will remember.
Mm-hmm.
And the words are role, R-O-L-E-S, roles,
mm-hmm.
relationships, realities, and rewards. And actually, since that talk that you saw, Michelle, online,
yeah.
I've actually come up with a fifth R.
Okay.
Which is readiness.
Mm.
Mm. And I think when we look at caregiving in that in that context with mm-hmm. with those perspectives, and maybe we'll talk a little bit about that. But it helps us to appreciate and understand how caregiving is changing our lives and how we can be more effective and more proactive as caregivers.
And I love the words. I mean, I love them all, but realities and readiness mean a great deal to me, because when I came to Alzheimer's Services of the East Bay now over 23 years ago as a program director, I realized I was moving into a different world where we were working with individuals with dementia. And they were individuals that I would consider my elders. So I in my world, they were visible. They were they deserved to be treated with dignity, regardless of their dementia. And all of a sudden, I was in a world where they were invisible, where they were not seen. Or people would say weird things, like a couple. All my guests have said this, like, you know, well, they're not going to remember you did that anyway. Or they're, you know, doing hand massaging. Well, they won't remember that. It's like, it doesn't matter. And that was where I got to being so frustrated trying to teach folks to say, it doesn't matter. In the moment, they are resonating with you. There's a connection happening. And that's the reality. But you got to be ready. I love these. You have to be ready to be able to say, this is not about me, and this is about creating a new story. Because you even said it, that you said, you use almost the same terminology, the same story with that person in that space, instead of trying to create the old story that you want to hold on to, and then when they can't meet you, you're all disappointed and upset. When you could have had a really cool visit, but talk about that.
Well, I think that, you know, you've touched on so many things there, Michelle, but one of the most important parts of caregiving is meeting the care receiver where they are. Whatever their condition is, you're focused on the present. Yeah. I mean, caregiving causes us to focus on the present and to whether they have the dementia or they have they're bound to a wheelchair or they're bed bound, you know, your presence often is the best thing that you can give. And it allows you to connect with that care receiver and help them to feel human, to reinforce their human dignity mm-hmm. and their worth. Mm-hmm. And just because a person with dementia doesn't remember what you did or did not do, that does not mean that you shouldn't do it. You absolutely should engage with them and interact with them, and they will benefit from your experience and your interactions, and so will you.
That's right.
So will you. I mean, caregiving is a reflection of our mutuality mm-hmm. as human beings, right? It's a recognition of one another. Caregiving is selfless by its very nature. It causes us to think outside of ourselves to help someone else.
Yes.
And that concept of readiness, so the first four R's, role.
Yeah, please. Would you go through those? Yeah, please.
Okay.
Yeah, go through them, because I think this is important for folks to understand, because caregiving, as you said earlier, and you say also in your book, it's thrust upon us. We're not always prepared. Not all of us had a pet. Some of us, it's our first experience at seeing somebody that we love and sometimes not love, because of the I love you use language, nuclear family. You're forced into this situation that you maybe, the timing may be wrong, all of it. And so having these five R's is, I think, is important. So if you would review them in what you feel is important, that would be great.
Sure. So talking first about roles, roles are things that are positions that we assume in the social world. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we talk about it like hats that we wear. Right? So if I put on my hat I live in Virginia. I put on my hat as a Virginian. I might make a comment about, you know, East Coast or West Coast,
right.
Or I might put my hat on as a business owner, you know, and weigh in on something as a business owner, or I might put my hat on as a white guy, and
mm-hmm.
you know, but
mm-hmm.
these are all sort of things, positions that I hold, and,
right.
and some of them are things that I was born with, like being white,
mm-hmm.
but other roles are things where I assume that role. I choose to engage in that role. You know, I chose to become a business owner, for example.
Mm-hmm.
I chose to live in Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
Some roles we don't necessarily choose.
Right.
And the caregiver role is one of those roles that
mm-hmm.
we didn't choose. And it's a role that comes to us because of the condition of someone else.
Yeah.
So in a family, you know, you've always had this historic relationship with your loved one. And let's use the example of a mother and a daughter, where the daughter is the caregiver for the mother,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
As a daughter, you know, you've always had that historic role in that relationship with that woman who is your mother. That is a unique relationship.
Mm-hmm.
There is nobody else in life.
That's right.
It is your mother.
That's right.
That is her role. And her role in that relationship caused her to raise you, to make enormous sacrifices for you, to
mm-hmm.
teach you, to feed you, to train you, and to cheerlead for you, right, as you
right.
get older.
Yeah.
And the way that you think about your mother is unique.
Mm-hmm.
The way that you interact with your mother is probably pretty unique. You don't interact with your boss the same way as your mother.
Okay.
You don't interact with your brother the same way as your mother.
No.
You don't interact with your best friend the same way as your mom. I mean,
That's
your
right.
mom is your mom.
That's right. That's right.
And you are her daughter. And she looks at you in that way.
Yeah, that's right.
So that historic relationship, mother-daughter, it's a role-based relationship. But it has enormous meaning.
Yes, yes.
And so when your mother, who always had that role for you and cared for you your whole life, now requires care from you, it's going to be different. The way that you interact with your mother is going to be different. The things that you think about your mother will be different.
Yes.
The things that you say to her will be different.
Mm-hmm.
And likewise, she will probably be different in the way that she sees
yeah.
you.
Yeah.
So what's happening there is that role in that relationship is evolving and changing.
Yeah.
And the role that used to be 100% daughter is now increasingly partially caregiver.
Mm-hmm.
And you may have a very hard time processing that, accepting that, adapting to that. And that is rooted in applied gerontology. What I'm describing to you is called Family Caregiver Identity Theory.
Mm-hmm.
It came from Rhonda Montgomery and Carl Kozlowski, who spent almost 3 decades
wow.
studying family caregivers. And they defined family caregiving as a series of role-based transitions that are precipitated by the changing health conditions of your loved one.
Mm-hmm.
So over time, as your mother's needs increase and her health worsen, you're taking more and more of that caregiver responsibility to
yep.
the point that potentially caregiver crowds out daughter.
Yeah.
And you're not really a daughter anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe you redefine what it means to be a daughter. And this is something that you have to come to terms with in your mind, and you have to be able to say, being a daughter to a mom with Alzheimer's disease encompasses all of these caregiving tasks, these tasks that I was not ready to perform. I didn't know how to do it, but because that's my mom, I'm going to honor that historic relationship with her and the place
mm-hmm.
that she's had in my life, but I'm going to start doing these caregiving things, even though I didn't really want to, because
mm-hmm.
I need to, and she's my mom, and she needs
right.
me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so this whole process of sort of adapting to the role of caregiver is so important to sustain yourself
yeah.
over the long haul in caregiving. But it's something that people don't even think about.
No, not at all.
It just happens, and you have this kind of internal conflict that goes on about, well, what should I be doing for my mom? How much should I do for her? What, like, how does she perceive me? What the heck? You know, like, this is so, I don't know that I can do this.
That's right.
So simply understanding how these roles evolve and change can have a huge impact on, you know, how you feel about your caregiving role and how you can adapt and continue over time.
And the caregiver also is getting younger. So, I mean, we just had a conversation in one of our interdisciplinary team meetings. And with, for those of you that don't know what that means that the nurse, the physical therapist, all of us come together in a space to discuss the care plan for that individual. And that the caregiver is only 23 years old. And so being asked to do things that a 23-year-old does, in some ways it's about maturity, but it's more about life experience. And he's just like, oh my gosh, how do I do all of this and still maintain my own 23-year-old personage identity? And I think it's harder on younger people. I'm not saying that it's not hard on older folks, but for a young man that's 23 that's still in college and wants to have a date on a Friday night or take a go away for the weekend, that's now no longer.
It is very hard, and you've talked about different roles that somebody has in their life, right?
Yeah.
So a college student, you know, or an employee, or, you know, a boyfriend or girlfriend, or whatever those other roles are.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes caregiving forces you to spend more time in the caregiving role and the caregiver role and less time in those other roles. And so it can be hard. And I agree with you, especially for younger caregivers who are really focused on the planning phase of their life, the preparation phase of their life, the building phase of their life. You know, they've got their whole future ahead of them. And, you know, you don't want caregiving to derail your future.
Exactly.
So how do you do that? And I think that when caregiving calls helps family caregivers to sort of go through that process and think about these things on a deeper level and also look forward to the future to realize, how can I sustain the caregiving for my loved one and also continue to be who I am as an individual?
Yep. At the end of every chapter in the book, you ask questions or leave questions for people to can you tell me what was your reasoning for putting that there, and how do you hope people utilize that?
So, Michelle, when I was writing When Caregiving Calls, I just kept thinking about family caregivers who would be reading this book. And I kept asking myself, what do they need? What do they need to know? And so the 18 chapters are full of information that they need to know, but the chapters are concise. I wanted this book to be very, very easy to understand, easy to read, easy to follow, very accessible. So they're not long-winded chapters at all.
Okay.
I didn't want to write a book where, you know, the author just goes on and on and on and on and on and says the same thing over and over. No, I did not want a book like that.
Yeah.
But then I thought, well, you know, these chapters are great. They inform the caregiver, but I want to do a little bit more than that. And how could you so this is where my doctoral degree came into play, and my doctorate is actually in education. It's in learning.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
So I'm not a medical doctor.
Okay.
But I think that learning is the gateway to understanding, to change, and to growth.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wanted this, When Caregiving Calls, to be a book that could produce learning for a family caregiver. And so the questions for reflection after every chapter are designed to allow the caregiver to think about the chapter that they just read, the information that they just read, and then receive some thought-provoking and perhaps some deeply penetrating questions, applying that material mm-hmm. to their own individual caregiving experience. And by doing so, the caregiver is also invited to even write down, to reflect and write down the answers and their thoughts and their feelings in response to these questions. And then at the end, the last chapter of the book is an invitation for the caregiver to go back and review what they've reflected upon and then prioritize some action steps that will help them to make their caregiving life better. And, you know, when caregivers do better, care receivers also do better. But I found that, you know, this is not a book, Michelle, where it's an encyclopedia. It's not, I'm not trying to give the caregiver all of the answers, because there's no way that I can give someone all of the answers. But what I found is that family caregivers themselves often have the access to the best solutions. They might just need someone to ask them the right questions. And so those questions are designed to evoke, you know, they're very common issues that come up in caregiving, and they allow the family caregiver to identify and discover on their own how they can do better. There was an early reader of the book, and she was a family caregiver, and I was talking to her about her reaction to the book. And she said, you know, I liked the questions for reflection, but I didn't like the questions for reflection.
Right.
I'm like, what? What do you mean? And she goes, well, I guess there were some questions in there that I just did not want to think about. But I know and I knew that I had to think about them. So yeah. I think they were really good.
Yeah. Yeah. See, that's the thing, and that's that mirror thing that I talk about, where we have to be our own change, but first we have to look at ourselves and identify that sometimes we get in our own way. And relate with this also, Aaron, is that I always say to people, let's stop beating ourselves up for who we are in this moment. But if we see something that doesn't make us happy in that mirror, then let's do some research and get some information, and then make a plan to, you know, dream, plan, and do, you know, to be something, be something different than what you want. But that doesn't mean that what you are is not good. It just means that we're evolving human beings, and caregiving is definitely something where you evolve over time, you know, and I don't think we should even use words, and you haven't, in anything that you've said or anything that I've read, where it's good or bad. It isn't. The scale doesn't. This is not law.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
So talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. You know, when caregiving calls, I will say this, Michelle, there's no judgment.
That's right.
I'm not here to try to judge the decisions that a family caregiver makes or does not make. It's just what is.
Right.
And, you know, this is the circumstance that your loved one is in.
Mm-hmm.
And every decision that you make has trade-offs. And when caregiving calls helps you to evaluate some of those trade-offs, you know, one of the very common things that comes up is, do I place my loved one into a facility or not? Do I take care of my loved one myself?
Mm-hmm.
And there's no right or wrong answer to that, Michelle.
That's right. That's right. That's right, Aaron.
I would never tell someone, you know, oh, you have to do that or you can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, whether or not you are able to take care of your loved one, it really hinges upon your loved one's condition.
That's right.
The needs that they have, and then your capacity to meet them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the more severe that condition is, the greater level of need that your loved one has, the more difficult it becomes.
That's right.
To provide 24/7 care, mm-hmm. as a single individual.
Mm-hmm. And then you could be a part of the sandwich generation like you were, it sounds like, when you became or when your family was thrust into the caregiving situation. And that's even, you know, that can cause some challenges as well.
Absolutely. And I think with, you know, with COVID-19, we're seeing loved ones, and do I pull them out of a nursing home to live with me? But if they live with me, am I going to be able to do it? I mean, these are all very legitimate questions.
Yep.
And when Caregiving Calls actually talks a little bit about that.
And so again, when Caregiving Calls is out, it is, because we're running out of time, but when Caregiver Calls by Dr. Aaron Blight is out, it is a journal document, a book that will take you through the caregiving. I love that there are stories in there, because, you know, I'm a storyteller, he's a storyteller, and we do that because from experiences you can learn from other people's life experiences. I think that's just so important. That's why I bear myself to you in the way that I do, because it's one thing for me to sit here and talk about 23, but when I say I've experienced it and this is how I've overcome or not overcome, because some things I'm still dealing with because I'm a human, right? We're all human. But the book, When Caregiving Calls, is, again, one of those things, and I love that you said this also, Aaron, no one resource will get you through the caregiving journey. It's a cornucopia of resources that help you, both written, community, all of it. And then when you put it all together, you throw it all down, and you figure out what resonates with you. Chapter 8 and 7 and 6 might resonate with you from When Caregiving Calls. And then there's another book where chapter 1, but you pull it all together in your heart, you see, your mind and your heart, and then it helps you to meet your person, your loved one, where they are in the caregiving. But I want to ask Dr. Blight to say to you, as folks are going into the holiday season, and you know this, as having been a home health owner, a business owner, as well as through your experiences, what would you say to them is the moment for? I mean, again, they've made it through COVID. We're getting through COVID, everybody. Vaccine was ADA said to Pfizer, yes, so we should be seeing that soon. But this has been a long year for particularly elders and caregivers. So what would be your sort of heart advice or experience advice to get them through the next couple of weeks while we wait for the vaccine and they continue their caregiving in home?
Well, the first thing I would say, Michelle, is obviously to keep your loved ones safe.
Yeah.
And that includes all of the public health measures that we've been invited to follow, the mask wearing, the social distancing, the hand washing. Be very mindful of the needs of your loved one. They're more vulnerable than you. Yeah. And so you have to just constantly be focused on that. And the second thing is, you know, you may not be able to celebrate with your loved one this year in the same way as you have in the past, but that doesn't mean that you should not celebrate at all.
Mm-hmm.
There are other ways that you can interact with your loved one and engage with your loved one. And I would just encourage family caregivers to do what they can to show their continued love and support for their loved ones. And even if your loved one is not a care receiver right now,
mm-hmm.
you know, I have a couple of parents who, they don't need help with activities of daily living, but they are in their 70s and they've been fairly isolated, and you know, we're not going to see them in Christmas this year like we have in the past. So just being able to continue to reach out through video messaging, through letters, mm-hmm. through phone calls, through, you know, little gifts, gestures, things that show your loved one that you still care about them and that COVID is never going to change that. I think that's so important.
And I think it's important for both sides. You know, I haven't seen my son, and he just texted me the other day, said, what are we going to do for Christmas? I said, well, we're back in purple zone, shelter in place, and I may not see you, but I will see him because we will create a Zoom experience. And so those of you who are, as Dr. Blight has said, you know, create these videos, go to the Alzheimer's Services of the East Bay website on Monday. And by Monday, we have some UC Berkeley students who put together a video just for you on how to use Zoom, Instagram, and all the social media. And in a couple of weeks, we will also have it in other languages. But I know it's scary. I know it's scary because I don't even use my phone to the best of its ability because I'm afraid of it. I don't like doing banking. I'm with you there. But at the end of the day, to keep those people connections, those heart connections that give us life and fuel us, we'll help you get through this time. So Dr. Aaron Blight has been with us this morning, and I want to say to you, Dr. Blight, as an inspirational speaker, as a caregiver, as an author, and a fellow human being on this planet trying to change the trajectory of how we look at aging and how we treat each other in this universe, I really thank you, and I humbly am so appreciative that you joined us this morning through this social media platform. You're in Virginia, I'm in California, but really, thank you, and all of you out there, please share this when caregiving calls. There's so many books out there. There's so many wonderful stuff out there. But I'm telling you, I have already begun my research with When Caregiving Calls, and I think it's a resource that you should have in your home. So, Dr. Aaron Blight, have a wonderful Christmas.